how long have you been a full-time resident of Montana? I know you've had the ranch since 84.
I've been a full-time resident of Montana since about 1992.
Because I thought you worked for some banks.
I have various times worked for banks or mortgage banks in various places, but I always flew home.
My question was, how long have you been a full-time resident where you didn't live anywhere else but Montana?
Well, I think that is being a full-time resident of Montana.
Even though you were working in Minnesota and California?
Yeah. I mean, I always came home. I paid resident income taxes here.
How much of the year were you here?
Well, a lot of the time that I worked in these jobs, I worked from Montana. And so I would periodically fly from Montana to an office or location outside of Montana. But a lot of the time I worked in Montana.
And why do you want to be the next U.S. Senator from Montana? You've not run for political office before, I don't believe.
That's correct. When I looked at what was going on in July of this past year, I felt like the candidate for whom the runway was being cleared.
Mr. Walsh.
John Walsh. I couldn't see him beating Steve Daines. And I thought we needed a strong progressive who had a variety of experience, life experiences and business experiences and job skills to beat Steve Daines. And I didn't think John Walsh was that guy. I'm running because I think the objective of the Democrats is to win this Senate race. And I think I'm more qualified to take Steve Daines on than John Walsh.
And do you think Montanans as a whole are progressive in their views? You think a progressive can win a Senate seat?
Yes, yes, I do. I think it's a matter of folks understanding that a progressive is really somebody who wants to conserve human health and intellect and also wants to conserve the environment. And therefore, in the best Teddy Roosevelt tradition, is really a conservative.
Let's talk about some of those environmental issues. You oppose the Keystone XL pipeline. Tell me why.
I oppose the pipeline because it's nothing more than an arbitrage between $50 a barrel oil in Alberta and $100 a barrel oil in Port Arthur, Texas. And it's not necessary for energy security. What's going on in the Bakken is sufficient for U.S. energy security. So what we're asking is for Montanans to take a risk with the pipeline for basically foreign arbitrageurs. And I just don't think it's worth the risk.
You support what's going on in the Bakken?
I think that oil and gas development in the Bakken is a good thing. I worry because I come from the Beaumont-Port Arthur region of Texas. I worry an awful lot about whether we're on top of the messes that get made by the oil and gas industry and whether we're being tough enough on controlling the environmental dangers. But yes, I support oil and gas development in the Bakken.
And what about the impact of fossil fuels on climate change?
I'm very concerned about the impact of fossil fuels on climate change. That's the reason I said coal is dead. That's the reason I've wanted to talk about climate change for a long time. And I've been pretty clear that coal as a future fossil as a future energy source is just not a good idea for a lot of different reasons.
Coal brings a ton of revenue into Montana state coffers. How would you replace that revenue if coal ceased being something that was developed in Montana?
So, first of all, coal is going to cease being developed in Montana. This isn't
because of the market.
Because there is simply no ongoing market for coal. So the state of Montana needs to develop different revenue sources and needs not to develop a reliance on coal. So the answer to how would we replace those revenues, I think, is a more complicated question than I can probably answer right this moment.
Give it a shot.
Okay. I would say that we probably ought to increase taxes on oil and gas and not give them the tax holiday they have. And I would say that otherwise we need to look at reduced expenses.
You are pro-choice and you're pro-gay marriage.
Yes, I am. My mother founded Southeast Texas Family Planning in 1962. And that was about birth control. It's how it started out, birth control pills. And here we are 52 years later still having the same conversations, which I think is about 47 years too long.
There's a lot of debate in this country, as you know, about health care and whether the Affordable Care Act was or was not a good idea. You're okay with the Affordable Care Act. You're not okay with how it was rolled out.
Well, who can be okay with with the way it was rolled out? But I support the Affordable Care Act, and I think folks should do that. We should do what Governor Schweitzer suggested, which is go on to single payer
and have universal health care, pretty much.
Yes, yes. I think it's going to turn out to be a whole lot less expensive than the alternative, which is lots of people without health care insurance.
You also are a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. What do you think about background checks, universal background checks?
I think that the background check issue is going to be moot in a year or two. I think the background checks that are currently conducted are fine. I'm not for expanding them, and I'm for facing up to the fact that anybody within a couple of years that has a printer is going to have a gun. And so we're not going to
because of the 3D.
The 3D printing, yes. And so I think technology is changing things, and that the argument about gun control is about to have a dramatic shift.
Is that good or bad in your opinion?
You know, I the answer is I don't know, but I think we need to start talking about it so we can figure out what the good policy positions are.
In the meantime, why are you opposed to universal background checks?
I'm opposed to universal background checks because I think the real problem is mental health challenges that folks face. And I don't think that the president or the government has stepped up to their responsibilities with regard to better mental health. I think background checks are not a particularly effective remedy, particularly when a lot of the mental health challenges that are faced by folks in this country don't get recorded someplace in connection with the background check.
We'll talk a little bit about the horse race now. There's a quote from a Gallatin County Democratic official who said this about you. He said, "He seems like a friendly enough guy, but in my mind, he's just a banker who's got a little too much time on his hands right now."
Well, I didn't have too much time on my hands, and the young man that made that quotation has since apologized for it as a mischaracterization.
You do have a background in, I think you were a trial attorney in New York.
Yes.
You also taught briefly at the business school here at the University of Montana.
For 2 years.
And then you went into the banking industry and were a banker in Minnesota and California, among other places. Part of the criticism of your candidacy is that some of those banks failed and that you had some part to play. And what were the reasons for those failures?
Well, so first of all, you skipped over the fact that I was a senior bank regulator on the West Coast for about 4 years. And so I'm keenly aware of the regulatory opportunities and responsibilities. And second, one of the banks that I was involved in failed, only one.
The one in Minnesota.
The one in Minnesota, Home Savings. And it was a very sad and wrenching experience for me and for my employees. But we were one of 1,000 community banks that failed because the mortgage market collapsed, which was caused by Wall Street speculation in home mortgages. We did not make subprime mortgages, and we did not make loans to people with bad credit.
But the federal regulators did question the bank's practices with its adjustable rate mortgages.
Well, I was following a business plan that I laid out before we bought the bank and that the regulators insisted I follow. And they never gave me permission to vary from that business plan, and I followed it to a T.
I do want to ask you also, now Senator Walsh is certainly the front runner because he's known in Montana and because he is a sitting senator now. How do you buck that?
Well, I think that folks know how Senator Walsh got his position. I think that folks understand what Walsh's resume looks like. And I think they understand how shaky his commitment is to the environment. And
what's your evidence of that?
Well, he favored. Have you been to his website?
Yep.
Okay. So you've noticed then that the word environment doesn't appear anywhere on his website. And you've noticed that the words climate change don't appear anywhere on his website. And you've noticed that he's never said publicly anything about climate change. but that he is an advocate of extended and increased coal development, and that he's an advocate for the Trans-Canada pipeline, and that he has taken money from every polluter in America as part of his campaign, including British Petroleum, Canada, Exxon, Mobil, and the Chinese National Petroleum Company.
You bring up the issue of money. His war chest, I'm guessing, is considerably bigger than yours. How do you buck someone who has name recognition in the state, and you're trying to get it between now and June 3rd, and has way more money to spend? How do you beat those odds?
It's always interesting to me when folks ask me about money, and then they turn around and ask me about Citizens United. And it seems to me that you can run a campaign in Montana for a lot less than all the money in the world. And that's what I intend to do.
And win a U.S. Senate seat.
Absolutely. If you can't, what does that say about our democracy?
Well, I have been speaking with Dirk Adams, who is one of three Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate, the other being John Bollinger and John Walsh. Mr. Adams, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate your time.
Glad to do it. Thank you.